conscious, and he was young. 16, might be. No more than 18. Dunk might have taken him for a squire, if Sir Kyle had not named him with a sir. The lad had pimples on his cheeks in place of whiskers. "How long have you been a knight?" Dunk asked him. "Long enough. Half a year when the moon turns. I was knighted by Sir Morgan Dunstable of Tumbler's Falls. 2 dozen people saw it. But I've been training for knighthood since I was born. I rode before I walked, and knocked a grown man's tooth out of his head before I lost any of my own. I mean to make my name at Whitewall's and claim the dragon's egg."
"The dragon's egg? Is that a champion's prize? Truly?" The last dragon had perished half a century ago. Sir Arlen had once seen a clutch of her eggs, though.
"They were hard as stone, but beautiful to look upon," the old man had told Dunk.
"How could Lord Butterwell come by a dragon's egg?"
"King Aegon presented the egg to his father's father, after guesting for a night at his old castle," said Sir Maynard Plum.
"Was it a reward for some act of valour?" asked Dunk.
Sir Kyle chuckled.
Some might call it that. Supposedly old Lord Butterwell had 3 young maiden daughters when his grace came calling. By morning, all 3 had royal bastards in their little bellies. A hot night's work, that was."
Dunk had heard such talk before. Aegon the Unworthy had bedded half the maidens in the realm, and fathered bastards on the lot of them, supposedly. Worse, the old king had legitimized them all upon his deathbed. The base-born ones, born of tavern wenches, whores, and shepherd girls, and the great bastards, whose mothers had been high-born. We'd all be bastard sons of old King Aegon, if half these tales were true.
"And who's to say we're not?" Sir Maynard quipped.
"You ought to come with us to Whitewall's, Sir Duncan," urged Sir Kyle. "Your size is sure to catch some lordling's eye. You might find good service there. I know I shall. Geoffrey Caswell will be at this wedding, the Lord of Bitterbridge. When he was 3, I made him his first sword. I carved it out of pine to fit his hand. In my greener days, my sword was sworn to his father."
"Was that one carved from pine as well?" Sir Maynard asked. Kyle the cat had the grace to laugh.
"That sword was good steel, I assure ye. I should be glad to ply it once again in the service of the centaur. Sir Duncan, even if you do not choose to tilt, do join us for the wedding feast. There'll be singers and musicians, jugglers and tumblers, and a troop of comic dwarfs."
Dunk frowned. "Egg and I have a long journey before us. We're headed north to Winterfell. Lord Beron Stark is gathering swords to drive the Krakens from his shores for good."
"Too cold up there for me," said Sir Maynard. "If you want to kill Krakens, go west. The Lannisters are building ships to strike back at the Iron Men on their home islands. That's how you put an end to Dagon Greyjoy. Fighting him on land is fruitless. He just slips back to sea. You have to beat him on the water." That had the ring of truth, but the prospect of fighting Iron Men at sea was not one that Dunk relished. He'd had a taste of that on the White Lady, sailing from Dawn to Old Town, when he donned his armor to help the crew repel some raiders. The battle had been desperate and bloody, and once he'd almost fallen in the water. That would have been the end of him.
"The throne should take a lesson from Stark and Lannister," declared Sir Kyle the Cat. "At least they fight. What do the Targaryens do? King Aerys hides amongst his books. Prince Rhaegal prances naked through the Red Keep's halls, and Prince Maekar broods at Summerhall."
Egg was prodding at the fire with a stick to send sparks floating up into the night. Dunk was pleased to see him ignoring the mention of his father's name. Perhaps he's finally learned to hold that tongue of his.
"Myself, I blame Bloodraven," Sir Kyle went on. "He is the king's hand, yet he does nothing. What's the Kraken spread flame and terror up and down the Sunset Sea?"
Sir Maynard gave a shrug. His eyes fixed on Tyrosh, where Bittersteel sits in exile, plotting with the sons of Daemon Blackfyre. So he keeps the king's ships close at hand, lest they attempt to cross.
"Aye, that may well be," Sir Kyle said. "But many would welcome the return of Bittersteel. Bloodraven is the root of all our woes, the white worm gnawing at the heart of the realm."
Dunk frowned, remembering the hunchbacked Septon at Stony Sept.
"Words like that can cost a man his head. Some might say you're talking treason."
"How can the truth be treason?" asked Kyle the Cat. "In King Daron's day, a man did not have the fear to speak his mind, but now..."
he made a rude noise.
But Raven put King Aerys on the Iron Throne, but for how long? Aerys is weak, and when he dies, it will be bloody war between Lord Rivers and Prince Maekar for the crown, the hand against the heir.
You have forgotten Prince Rhaegal, my friend, Sir Maynard objected in a mild tone. He comes next in line to Aerys, not Maekar, and his children after him.
Rhaegal is feeble-minded. Why, I bear him no ill will, but the man is good as dead, and those twins of his as well, though whether they will die of Maekar's mace or Bloodraven's spells.
Seven save us, Dunk thought, as Egg spoke up shrill and loud.
Prince Maekar is Prince Rhaegal's brother. He loves him well. He'd never do harm to him or his.
Be quiet, boy, Dunk growled at him. These knights want none of your opinions.
I can talk if I want.
No, said Dunk. You can't. That mouth of yours will get you killed some day, and me as well, most like.
That salt beef soaked long enough, I think. A strip for all our friends, and be quick about it.
Egg flushed, and for half a heartbeat, Dunk feared the boy might talk back. Instead, he settled for a sullen look, seething as only a boy of 11 years can seethe.
Aye, sir, he said, fishing in the bottom of Dunk's helm. His shaven head shone redly in the firelight as he passed out the salt beef.
Dunk took his piece and worried at it. The soak had turned the meat from wood to leather, but that was all. He sucked on one corner, tasting the salt and trying not to think about the roast boar at the inn, crackling on its spit and dripping fat. As dusk deepened, flies and stinging midges came swarming off the lake. The flies preferred to plague their horses, but the midges had a taste for man flesh. The only way to keep from being bitten was to sit close to the fire, breathing smoke. Cook or be devoured, Dunk thought glumly. Now there's a beggar's choice. He scratched at his arms and edged closer to the fire. The wineskin soon came round again. The wine was sour and strong. Dunk drank deep and passed along the skin, whilst the cat of Misty Moor began to talk of how he had saved the life of the Lord of Bitterbridge during the Blackfyre Rebellion.
When Lord Arryn's banner-bearer fell, I leapt down from my horse with traitors all around us.
Sir, said Glendinbull, who are these traitors?
The Blackfyre men, I meant.
Firelight glimmered off the steel in Sir Glendon's hand. The pockmarks on his face flamed as red as open sores, and his every sinew was wound as tight as a crossbow.
My father fought for the Black Dragon.
This again, Dunk snorted. Red or black was not a thing you asked a man. It always made for trouble.
I'm sure Sir Kyle meant no insult to your father.
None,
Sir Kyle agreed.
It's an old tale, the Red Dragon and the Black. No sense for us to fight about it now, lad. We're all brothers of the hedges here.
Sir Glendon seemed to weigh the cat's words to see if he was being mocked.
Daemon Blackfyre was no traitor. The old king gave him the sword. He saw the worthiness in Daemon, even though he was born bastard. Why else would he put Blackfyre into his hand in place of Daeron's? He meant for him to have the kingdom, too. Daemon was the better man.
A hush fell. Dunk could hear the soft crackle of the fire. He could feel midges crawling on the back of his neck. He slapped at them, watching Egg, willing him to be still. I was just a boy when they fought the Redgrass Field, he said, when it seemed that no one else would speak. But I squired for a knight who fought with the Red Dragon, and later served another who fought for the Black. They were brave men on both sides.
Brave men, echoed Kyle the Cat, a bit feebly.
Heroes.
Glendon Ball turned his shield about, so all of them could see the sigil painted there, a fireball blazing red and yellow across a night-black field.
I come from heroes' blood.
You're Fireball's son, Egg said. That was the first time they saw Sir Glendon smile. Sir Kyle the Cat studied the boy closely.
How can that be? How old are you? Quentin Ball died.
Before I was born, Sir Glendon finished, but in me he lives again.
He slammed his sword back into its scabbard. I'll show you all at Whitewall's when I claim the dragon's egg. The next day proved the truth of Sir Kyle's prophecy. Ned's ferry was nowise large enough to accommodate all those who wished to cross, so Lords Costain and Shawnee must go first with their tails. That required several trips, each taking more than an hour. There were the mudflats to contend with. Horses and wagons to be gotten down the planks, loaded on the boat, and unloaded again across the lake. The two lords slowed matters even further when they got into a shouting match over precedence. Shawnee was the elder, but Costain held himself to be better born. There was naught that Dunk could do but wait and swelter.
"We could go first if you let me use my boot," Egg said.
"We could," Dunk answered, "but we won't. Lord Costain and Lord Shawnee were here before us. Besides, they're lords." Egg made a face. "Rebel lords." Dunk frowned down at him.
"What do you mean?" "They were for the Black Dragon."
"Well, Lord Shawnee was, and Lord Costain's father. Aemon and I used to fight the battle on Maester Meliquin's green table, with painted soldiers and little banners. Costain's arms quarter a silver chalice on black, with a black rose on gold. That banner was on the left of Daemon's host. Shawnee was with Bittersteel on the right, and almost died of his wounds." "Old dead history. They're here now, aren't they? So they bent the knee, and King Daeron gave him pardon."
"Yes, but..."
Dunk pinched the boy's lips shut.
"Hold your tongue."
Egg held his tongue. No sooner had the last boatload of Shawnee men pushed off than Lord and Lady Smallwood turned up at the landing with their own tale, so they must needs wait again. The Fellowship of the Hedge had not survived the night, it was plain to see. Sir Glendon kept his own company, prickly and sullen. Kyle the Cat judged that it would be midday before they were allowed to board the ferry, so he detached himself from the others to try and ingratiate himself with Lord Smallwood, with whom he had some slight acquaintance. Sir Maynard spent his time gossiping with the innkeep.
"Stay well away from that one," Dunk warned Egg. There was something about Plum that troubled him. "He could be a robber knight, for all we know."
The warning only seemed to make Sir Maynard more interesting to Egg.
"I never knew a robber knight. Do you think he means to steal the dragon's egg?"
"Lord Butterwell will have the egg well guarded, I'm sure." Dunk scratched the midge bites on his neck.
"Do you think you might display it at the feast? I'd like to get a look at one."
"I'd show you mine, sir, but it's at Summerhall."
"Yours? Your dragon's egg?"
Dunk frowned down at the boy, wondering if this was some jape.
"Where did it come from?"
"From a dragon, sir. They put it in my cradle."
"Do you want a clout in the ear? There are no dragons."
"No, but there are eggs. The last dragon left a clutch of five, and they have more on Dragonstone, old ones from before the dance. My brothers all have them too. Arion's looks as though it's made of gold and silver, with veins of fire running through it. Mine is white and green, all swirly."
"Your dragon's egg. They put it in his cradle."
Dunk was so used to Egg that sometimes he forgot Aegon was a prince. Of course they'd put a dragon egg inside his cradle.
"Well, see that you don't go mentioning this egg where anyone is like to hear."
"I'm not stupid, sir."
Egg lowered his voice.
"Someday the dragons will return. My brother Daeron's dreamed of it, and King Aerys read it in a prophecy. Maybe it will be my egg that hatches. That would be splendid."
"Would it?" Dunk had his doubts. "Not Egg. Aemon and I used to pretend that our eggs would be the ones to hatch. If they did, we could fly through the sky on dragonback, like the first Aegon and his sisters."
"Aye, and if all the other knights in the realm should die, I'd be the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. If these eggs are so bloody precious, why is Lord Butterwell giving his away?"
"To show the realm how rich he is?"
"I suppose."
Dunk scratched his neck again and glanced over at Sir Glendon Ball, who was tightening the cinches on his saddle as he waited for the ferry.
"That horse will never serve."
Sir Glendon's mount was a sway-backed stot, undersized and old.
"What do you know about his sire? Why do they call him Fireball?"
"For his hot head and red hair. Sir Quentin Ball was the master at arms at the Red Keep. He taught my father and my uncles how to fight. The great bastards, too. King Aegon promised to raise him to the Kingsguard, so Fireball made his wife join the Silent Sisters. Only by the time a place came open, King Aegon was dead, and King Daeron named Sir Willem Wilde instead. My father says that it was Fireball, as much as Bittersteel, who convinced Daemon Blackfyre to claim the crown, and rescued him when Daeron sent the Kingsguard to arrest him. Later on, Fireball killed Lord Lefford at the gates of Lannisport, and sent the Grey Lion running back to hide inside the rock. At the crossing of the Mander, he cut down the sons of Lady Penrose one by one. They say he spared the life of the youngest one as a kindness to his mother." That was chivalrous of him, Dunk had to admit. Did Sir Quentin die upon the red grass field?
Before, sir, Egg replied. An archer put an arrow through his throat as he dismounted by a stream to have a drink. Just some common man. No one knows who.
Most common men can be dangerous when they get it in their heads to start slaying lords and heroes.
Dunk saw the ferry creeping slowly across the lake.
Here it comes.
It's slow. Are we going to go to Whitewall, sir?
Why not? I want to see this dragon's egg.
Dunk smiled. If I win the tourney, we both have dragon's eggs.
Egg gave him a doubtful look.
What? Why are you looking at me that way?
I could tell you, sir, the boy said solemnly, but I need to learn to hold my tongue.
They seated the hedge knights well below the salt, closer to the doors than to the dais. Whitewalls was almost new as castles went, having been raised a mere 40 years ago by the grandsire of its present lord. The small folk hereabouts called it the Milk House, for its walls and keeps and towers were made of finely dressed white stone, quarried in the vale and brought over the mountains at great expense. Inside were floors and pillars of milky white marble veined with gold. The rafters overhead were carved from the bone-pale trunks of weirwoods.
Dunk could not begin to imagine what all of that had cost.
The hall was not so large as some others he had known, though.
At least we were allowed beneath the roof, Dunk thought, as he took his place on the bench between Sir Maynard Plum and Kyle the Cat.
Though uninvited, the three of them had been welcomed to the feast quick enough. It was ill luck to refuse a knight hospitality on your wedding day. Young Sir Glyndon had a harder time, however.
Fireball never had a son,
Dunk heard Lord Butterwell's steward tell him loudly. The stripling answered heatedly, and the name of Sir Morgan Dunstable was mentioned several times, but the steward had remained adamant. When Sir Glyndon touched his sword hilt, a dozen men-at-arms appeared with spears in hand, and for a moment it looked as though there might be bloodshed. It was only the intervention of a big blonde knight named Kirby Pym that saved the situation. Dunk was too far away to hear, but he saw Pym clasp an arm around the steward's shoulders and murmur in his ear, laughing. The steward frowned and said something to Sir Glyndon that turned the boy's face dark red.
He looks as if he's about to cry, Dunk thought, watching. There, or kill someone.
After all of that, the young knight was finally admitted to the castle hall. Poor Egg was not so fortunate.
The great hall is for the lords and knights,
an understeward had informed them haughtily when Dunk had tried to bring the boy inside.
We have set up tables in the inner yard for squires, grooms, and men-at-arms.
If you had an inkling who he was, you would seat him on the dais on a cushioned throne.
Dunk had not much liked the look of the other squires. A few were lads of Egg's own age, but most were older, seasoned fighters, who long ago had made the choice to serve a knight rather than become one.
Or did they have a choice?
Knighthood required more than chivalry and skill at arms. It required horse and sword and armour, too, and all of that was costly.
Watch your tongue, he told Egg before he left them in that company. These are grown men. They won't take kindly to your insolence. Sit and eat and listen. Might be you'll learn some things.
For his own part, Dunk was just glad to be out of the hot sun, with a wine cup before him and a chance to fill his belly. Even a hedge knight grows weary of chewing every bite of food for half an hour. Down here below the salt, the fare would be more plain than fancy, but there would be no lack of it. Below the salt was good enough for Dunk. But peasant's pride is lordling's shame, the old man used to say.
This cannot be my proper place,
Sir Glendon Ball told the understeward hotly. He had donned a clean doublet for the feast, a handsome old garment with gold lace at the cuffs and collar, and the red chevron and white plates of House Ball sewn across the chest.
Do you know who my father was?
A noble knight and mighty lord, I have no doubt,
said the understeward.
But the same is true of many here. Please take your seat or take your leave, sir. It's all the same to me.
In the end, the boy took his place below the salt with the rest of them, his mouth sullen. The long white hall was filling up, as more knights crowded onto the benches. The crowd was larger than Dunk had anticipated, and from the looks of it, some of the guests had come a very long way. He and Egg had not been around so many lords and knights since Ashford Meadow, and there was no way to guess who else might turn up next.
We should have stayed out in the hedges, sleeping under trees, if I am recognized. When a serving man placed a loaf of black bread on the cloth in front of each of them, Dunk was grateful for the distraction. He sawed the loaf open lengthwise, hollowed out the bottom half for a trencher, and ate the top. It was stale, but compared to his salt beef, it was custard. At least it did not have to be soaked in ale or milk or water to make it soft enough to chew.
"Sir Duncan, you appear to be attracting a deal of attention," Sir Maynard Plum observed, as Lord Verwell and his party went parading past them towards places of high honour at the top of the hall.
"Those girls up on the dais cannot seem to take their eyes off you. I'll wager they've never seen a man so big. Even seated, you are half a head taller than any man in the hall."
Dunk hunched his shoulders. He was used to being stared at, but that did not mean he liked it.
"Let them look." "That's the old ox down there beneath the dais," Sir Maynard said. "They call him a huge man, but it seems to me his belly is the biggest thing about him. You're a bloody giant next to him."
"Indeed, sir,"
said one of their companions on the bench, a sallow man, saturnine, clad in grey and green. His eyes were small and shrewd, set close together beneath thin, arching brows. A neat black beard framed his mouth to make up for his receding hair.
"In such a field as this, your size alone should make you one of the most formidable competitors."
"I had heard the Brute of Bracken might be coming,"
said another man further down the bench.
"I think not,"
said the man in green and grey.
"This is only a bit of jousting to celebrate his lordship's nuptials. A tilt in the yard to mark tilt between the sheets. Hardly worth a bother for the likes of Otho Bracken."
Sir Kyle the cat took a drink of wine.
"I'll wager my Lord of Butterwell does not take the field either. He will cheer on his champions from his lord's box in the shade."
"Then he'll see his champions fall," boasted Sir Glendon Ball, "and in the end he'll hand his egg to me."
"Sir Glendon is the son of Fireball," Sir Kyle explained to the new man.
"And might we have the honour of your name, sir?"
"Sir Uthor Underleaf, the son of no one of importance." Underleaf's garments were of good cloth, clean and well cared for, but simply cut. A silver clasp in the shape of a snail fastened his cloak.
"If your lance is the equal of your tongue, Sir Glendon, you may even give this big fellow here a contest."
Sir Glendon glanced at Dunk as the wine was being poured. "If we meet, he'll fall. I don't care how big he is." Dunk watched a server fill his wine cup.
"I am better with a sword than with a lance," he admitted, "and even better with a battle axe. Will there be a melee here?"
His size and strength would stand him in good stead in a melee, and he knew he could give as good as he got. Jousting was another matter.
"A melee? At a marriage?"
Sir Kyle sounded shocked.
"That would be unseemly."
Sir Maynard gave a chuckle. "A marriage is a melee, as any married man could tell you." Sir Uthor chuckled.
"There's just a joust, I fear. But besides the dragon's egg, Lord Butterwell has promised 30 gold dragons for the loser of the final tilt, and 10 each for their knights defeated in the round before."
10 dragons is not so bad.
10 dragons would buy a palfrey, so Dunk would not need to ride thunder, save in battle. 10 dragons would buy a suit of plate for Egg, and a proper knight's pavilion sewn with Dunk's tree and falling star.
10 dragons would mean roast goose and ham and pigeon pie.
"But there are ransoms to be had as well for those who win their matches,"
Sir Uthor said as he hollowed out his trencher,
"and I have heard it rumoured that some men place wagers on the tilts. Lord Butterwell himself is not fond of taking risks, but amongst his guests there are some who wager heavily."
No sooner had he spoken than Ambrose Butterwell made his entrance to a fanfare of trumpets from the minstrels' gallery. Dunk shoved to his feet with the rest, as Butterwell escorted his new bride down a patterned mirrorish carpet to the dais, arm in arm. The girl was 15 and freshly flowered, her lord husband 50 and freshly widowed. She was pink and he was grey. Her bride's cloak trailed behind her, done in undy green and white and yellow. It looked so hot and heavy that Dunk wondered how she could bear to wear it. Lord Butterwell looked hot and heavy too, with his heavy jowls and thinning flaxen hair. The bride's father followed close behind her, hand in hand with his young son. Lord Frey of the Crossing was a lean man, elegant in blue and grey, his heir a chinless boy of 4 whose nose was dripping snot. Lords Costain and Risley came next, with their lady wives, daughters of Lord Butterwell by his first wife. Frey's daughters followed with their own husbands. Then came Lord Gorman Peak, Lord Smallwood and Shawnee, various lesser lords and landed knights. Amongst them Dunk glimpsed John the Fiddler and Alan Cockshaw. Lord Alan looked to be in his cups, though the feast had not yet properly begun. By the time all of them had sauntered to the dais, the high table was as crowded as the benches. Lord Butterwell and his bride sat on plump downy cushions in a double throne of gilded oak. The rest planted themselves in tall chairs with fancifully carved arms. On the wall behind them, two huge banners hung from the rafters, the twin towers of Frey, blue on grey, and the green and white and yellow undy of the Butterwells. It fell to Lord Frey to lead the toasts.
"The King!"
he began simply. Sir Glendon held his wine cup out above the water basin. Dunk clanked his cup against it, and against Sir Uthor's and the rest as well. They drank.
"Lord Butterwell, our gracious host," Frey proclaimed next. "May the Father grant him long life and many sons."
They drank again.
"Lady Butterwell, the maiden bride, my darling daughter. May the mother make her fertile."
Frey gave the girl a smile.
"I shall want a grandson before the year is out. Twins would suit me even better. So, churn the butter well tonight, my sweet."
Laughter rang against the rafters, and the guests drank still once more. The wine was rich and red and sweet. Then Lord Frey said,
"I give you the king's hand, Brynden Rivers. May the crone's lamp light his path to wisdom."
He lifted his goblet high and drank, together with Lord Butterwell and his bride and the others on the dais. Below the salt, Sir Glendon turned his cup over to spill its contents to the floor.
"Sad waste of good wine," said Maynard Plum. "I do not drink to kinslayers," said Sir Glendon. "Lord Bloodraven is a sorcerer and a bastard."
"Born bastard," Sir Uthor agreed mildly, "but his royal father made him legitimate as he lay dying."
He drank deep, as did Sir Maynard and many others in the hall. Near as many lowered their cups or turned them upside down as Ball had done. Dunk's own cup was heavy in his hand.
"How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have?" the riddle went. 1,000 eyes and 1.
Toast followed toast, some proposed by Lord Frey and some by others. They drank to young Lord Tully, Lord Butterwell's liege lord, who had begged off from the wedding. They drank to the health of Leo Longthorn, Lord of Highgarden, who was rumoured to be ailing. They drank to the memory of their gallant dead.
"I," thought Dunk, remembering, "I'll gladly drink to them."
Sir John the Fiddler proposed the final toast.
"To my brave brothers, I know that they are smiling tonight."
Dunk had not intended to drink so much with the jousting on the morrow, but the cups were filled anew after every toast, and he found he had a thirst.
"Never refuse a cup of wine or a horn of ale," Sir Arlen had once told him. "It may be a year before you see another." It would have been discourteous not to toast the bride and groom, he told himself, and dangerous not to drink to the king in his hand, with strangers all about.
Mercifully, the fiddler's toast was the last. Lord Butterwell rose ponderously to thank them for coming and promise good jousting on the morrow.
"Let the feast begin!"
Suckling pig was served at the high table, a peacock roasted in its plumage, a great pike crusted with crushed almonds. Not a bite of that made it down below the salt. Instead of suckling pig, they got salt pork, soaked in almond milk and peppered pleasantly. In place of peacock, they had capons, crisped up nice and brown, and stuffed with onions, herbs, mushrooms, and roasted chestnuts. In place of pike, they ate chunks of flaky white cod in a pastry coffin, with some sort of tasty brown sauce that Dunk could not quite place. There was peas porridge besides, buttered turnips, carrots drizzled with honey, and a ripe white cheese that smelled as strong as Bennis of the Brown Shield. Dunk ate well, but all the while wondered what Egg was getting in the yard. Just in case, he slipped half a capon into the pocket of his cloak, with some hunks of bread and a little of the smelly cheese. As they ate, pipes and fiddles filled the air with sprightly tunes, and the talk turned to the morrow's jousting.
"Sir Franklin Frey is well regarded along the Green Fork," said Uthor Underleaf, who seemed to know these local heroes well. "That's him upon the dais, the uncle of the bride. Lucas Nayland is down from Hag's Mire. He should not be discounted. Nor should Sir Mortimer Box of Cracklore Point. Elsewise, this should be a tourney of household knights and village heroes. Kirby Pym and Galtry the Green are the best of those, though.
Neither is a match for Lord Butterwell's good son, Black Tom Heddle. Nasty bit of business, that one. He won the hand of his lordship's eldest daughter by killing three of her other suitors, it said, and once unhorsed the Lord of Castle Rock.
What, young Lord Tybalt? Asked Sir Maynard.
No, the old grey lion, the one who died in the spring.
That was how men spoke of those who had perished during the great spring sickness. He died in the spring. Tens of thousands had died in the spring, amongst them a king and two young princes.
Do not slight Sir Buford Bulwer, said Kyle the Cat. The old ox slew 40 men upon the Redgrass Field.
And every year his count grows higher, said Sir Maynard. Bulwer's day is done. Look at him. Past 60, soft and fat, and his right eye as good as blind.
Do not trouble to search the hall for the champion, a voice behind Dunk said. Here I stand, sirs. Feast your eyes.
Dunk turned to find Sir John the Fiddler looming over him, a half-smile on his lips. His white silk doublet had dagged sleeves lined with red satin, so long their points drooped down past his knees. A heavy silver chain looped across his chest, studded with huge dark amethysts whose colour matched his eyes. That chain is worth as much as everything I own, Dunk thought. The wine had coloured Sir Glendon's cheeks and inflamed his pimples.
Who are you to make such boasts? They call me John the Fiddler. Are you a musician or a warrior? I can make sweet song with either lance or resined bow, as it happens. Every wedding needs a singer, and every tourney needs a mystery knight. May I join you? Butterwell was good enough to place me on the dais, but I prefer the company of my fellow hedge knights to fat pink ladies and old men. The fiddler clapped Dunk upon the shoulder. Be a good fellow and shove over, Sir Duncan.
Dunk shoved over. You are too late for food, sir.
No matter. I know where Butterwell's kitchens are.
There is still some wine, I trust. The fiddler smelled of oranges and limes, with a hint of some strange eastern spice beneath. Nutmeg, perhaps. Dunk could not have said. What did he know of nutmeg?
Your boasting is unseemly, Sir Glendon told the fiddler.
Truly? Then I must beg for your forgiveness, sir. I would never wish to give offence to any son of Fireball. That took the youth aback.
You know who I am?
Your father's son, I hope.
Look, said Sir Kyle the Cat, the wedding pie.
Six kitchen boys were pushing it through the doors upon a wide-wheeled cart. The pie was brown and crusty and immense, and there were noises coming from inside it, squeaks and squawks and thumps. Lord and Lady Butterwell descended from the dais to meet it, sword in hand. When they cut it open, half a hundred birds burst forth to fly around the hall. In other wedding feasts Dunk had attended, the pies had been filled with doves or songbirds, but inside this one were blue jays and skylarks, pigeons and doves, mockingbirds and nightingales, small brown sparrows, and a great red parrot.
21 sorts of birds, said Sir Kyle.
21 sorts of bird droppings, said Sir Maynard.
You have no poetry in your heart, sir.
You have shit upon your shoulder.
This is the proper way to fill a pie, Sir Kyle sniffed, cleaning off his tunic. The pie is meant to be the marriage, and a true marriage has in it many sorts of things. Joy and grief, pain and pleasure, love and lust and loyalty. So it is fitting that there be birds of many sorts. No man ever truly knows what a new wife will bring him.
Her cunt, said Plum. Well, what would be the point? Dunk shoved back from the table. I need a breath of air. It was a piss he needed, truth be told. But in fine company like this, it was more courteous to talk of air. Pray excuse me.
Hurry back, sir, said the fiddler. There are jugglers yet to come, and you do not want to miss the bedding.
Outside, the night wind lapped at Dunk like the tongue of some great beast. The hard-packed earth of the yard seemed to move beneath his feet. Or it might be that he was swaying. The lists had been erected in the centre of the outer yard. A three-tiered wooden viewing stand had been raised beneath the walls, so Lord Butterwell and his high-born guests would be well shaded on their cushioned seats. There were tents at both ends of the lists where the knights could don their armour, with racks of tawny lances standing ready. When the wind lifted the banners for an instant, Dunk could smell the whitewash on the tilting barrier. He set off in search of the inner ward. He had to hunt up Egg and send the boy to the Master of the Games to enter him in the lists. That was the squire's duty. White walls were strange to him, however, and somehow Dunk got turned around.
he found himself outside the kennels, where the hounds caught scent of him and began to bark and howl. "They want to tear my throat out," he thought, "or else they want a capon in my cloak." He doubled back the way he'd come, past the sept. A woman went running past, breathless with laughter, a bald knight in hard pursuit. The man kept falling, until finally the woman had to come back and help him up. "I should slip into the sept and ask the seven to make that knight my first opponent," Dunk thought, "but that would have been impious. What I really need is a privy, not a prayer." There were some bushes near at hand, beneath a flight of pale stone steps. "Those will serve." He groped his way behind them and unlaced his breeches. His bladder had been full to bursting. The piss went on and on. Somewhere above, a door came open. Dunk heard footfalls on the steps, the scrape of boots on stone.
"Beggar's feast you've laid before us, without bitter steel."
"Bitter steel be buggered," insisted a familiar voice. "No bastard can be trusted, not even him. A few victories will bring him over the water fast enough."
"Lord Peak." Dunk held his breath, and his piss.
"Easier to speak of victories than win them."
This speaker had a deeper voice than Peak, a bass rumble with an angry edge to it.
"Old Milkblood expected the boy to have it, and so will all the rest. Glib words and charm cannot make up for that."
"A dragon would. The prince insists the egg will hatch. He dreamed it, just as he once dreamed his brother's dead. A living dragon will win us all the sword that we would want."
"A dragon is one thing, a dream's another. I promise you, Bloodraven is not off dreaming. We need a warrior, not a dreamer. Is the boy his father's son?"
"Just do your part as promised, and let me concern myself with that. Once we have Butterwell's gold and the swords of House Frey, Harrenhal will follow, then the Brackens. Otho knows he cannot hope to stand."
The voices were fading as the speakers moved away. Dunk's piss began to flow again. He gave his cock a shake and laced himself back up. "His father's son," he muttered. "Who were they speaking of? Fireball's son?" By the time he emerged from under the steps, the two lords were well across the yard. He almost shouted after them to make them show their faces, but thought better of it. He was alone and unarmed, and half drunk besides. Maybe more than half. He stood there frowning for a moment, then marched back to the hall. Inside, the last course had been served, and the frolics had begun. One of Lord Frey's daughters played Two Hearts That Beat as One on the high harp, very badly. Some jugglers flung flaming torches at each other for a while, and some tumblers did cartwheels in the air. Lord Frey's nephew began to sing the Bear and the Maiden Fair, while Sir Kirby Pym beat out time upon the table with a wooden spoon. Others joined in, until the whole hall was bellowing,
"A bear, all black and brown and covered with hair."
Lord Caswell passed out at the table, with his face in a puddle of wine, and Lady Verwell began to weep, though no one was quite certain as to the cause of her distress. All the while, the wine kept flowing. The rich arbor reds gave way to local vintages, or so the fiddler said. If truth be told, Dunk could not tell the difference. There was Hippocras as well. He had to try a cup of that. "It might be a year before I have another." The other hedge knights, fine fellows all, had begun to talk of women they had known. Dunk found himself wondering where Tanzel was tonight. He knew where Lady Rohan was, abed at Coldmoke Castle, with old Sir Eustace beside her, snoring through his moustache. So he tried not to think of her. "Do they ever think of me?" he wondered. His melancholy ponderings were rudely interrupted when a troop of painted dwarfs came bursting from the belly of a wheeled wooden pig to chase Lord Butterwell's fool about the tables, walloping him with inflated pig's bladders that made rude noises every time a blow was struck. It was the funniest thing Dunk had seen in years, and he laughed with all the rest. Lord Frey's son was so taken by their antics that he joined in, pummeling the wedding guests with a bladder borrowed from a dwarf. The child had the most irritating laugh Dunk had ever heard, a high, shrill hiccup of a laugh that made him want to tick the boy over a knee or throw him down a well. "If he hits me with that bladder, I might do it." "There's the lad who made this marriage," Sir Maynard said, as the chinless urchin went screaming past.
"How so?"
The fiddler held up an empty wine cup, and a passing server filled it. Sir Maynard glanced toward the dais, where the bride was feeding cherries to her husband. "His lordship will not be the first to butter that biscuit. His bride was deflowered by a scullion at the Twins, they say.
She would creep down to the kitchens to meet him. Alas, one night, that little brother of hers crept down after her. When he saw them making the two-backed beast, he let out a shriek, and cooks and guardsmen came running and found Milady and her potboy coupling on the slab of marble where the cook rolls out the dough, both naked as their name day, and floured up from head to heel. That cannot be true, Dunk thought. Lord Butterwell had broad lands and pots of yellow gold. Why would he wed a girl who'd been soiled by a kitchen scullion and give away his dragon's egg to mark the match? The Freys of the Crossing were no nobler than the Butterwells. They owned a bridge instead of cows. That was the only difference. Lords, who can ever understand them? Dunk ate some nuts and pondered what he'd overheard whilst pissing. Dunk the Drunk, what is it that you think you heard? Yet another cup of hypocras, since the first had tasted good. Then he lay his head down atop his folded arms and closed his eyes, just for a moment, to rest them from the smoke. When he opened them again, half the wedding guests were on their feet and shouting, "Bed them! Bed them!" They were making such an uproar that they woke Dunk from a pleasant dream involving Tanzel Tootall and the Red Widow. "Bed them! Bed them!" the calls rang out. Dunk sat up and rubbed his eyes. Sir Franklin Frey had the bride in his arms and was carrying her down the aisle, with men and boys swarming all around him. The ladies at the high table had surrounded Lord Butterwell. Lady Verwell had recovered from her grief and was trying to pull his lordship from his chair, while one of his daughters unlaced his boots and some Frey woman pulled up his tunic. Butterwell was flailing at them ineffectually and laughing. He was drunk, Dunk saw, and Sir Franklin was a deal drunker. So drunk, he almost dropped the bride. Before Dunk quite realized what was happening, John the Fiddler had dragged him to his feet. "Here!" he cried out. "Let the giant carry her!" The next thing he knew, he was climbing a tower stair with the bride squirming in his arms. How he kept his feet was beyond him. The girl would not be still, and the men were all around them, making ribald japes about flouring her up and kneading her well, whilst they pulled off her clothes. The dwarfs joined in as well. They swarmed around Dunk's legs, shouting and laughing and smacking at his calves with their bladders. It was all he could do not to trip over them. Dunk had no notion where Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was to be found, but the other men pushed and prodded him until he got there, by which time the bride was red-faced, giggling, and nearly naked, save for the stocking on her left leg, which had somehow survived the climb. Dunk was crimson too, and not from exertion. His arousal would have been obvious if anyone had been looking, but fortunately all eyes were on the bride. Lady Butterwell looked nothing like Tanzel, but having the one squirming half-naked in his arms had started Dunk thinking about the other. Tanzel Tootall, that was her name, but she was not too tall for me. He wondered if he would ever find her again. There had been some nights when he thought he must have dreamed her. No, Lunk, you only dreamed she liked you. Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was large and lavish once he found it. Mirrorish carpets covered the floors. 100 scented candles burned in nooks and crannies, and a suit of plate inlaid with gold and gems stood beside the door. It even had its own privy set into a small stone alcove in the outer wall. When Dunk finally plopped the bride onto her marriage bed, a dwarf leapt in beside her and seized one of her breasts for a bit of a fondle. The girl let out a squeal. The men roared with laughter, and Dunk seized the dwarf by his collar and hauled him kicking off Milady. He was carrying the little man across the room to chuck him out the door when he saw the dragon's egg. Lord Butterwell had placed it on a black velvet cushion atop a marble plinth. It was much bigger than a hen's egg, though not so big as he'd imagined. Fine red scales covered its surface, shining bright as jewels by the light of lamps and candles. Dunk dropped the dwarf and picked up the egg, just to feel it for a moment. It was heavier than he'd expected. You could smash a man's head with this and never crack the shell. The scales were smooth beneath his fingers, and the deep, rich red seemed to shimmer as he turned the egg in his hands. Blood and flame, he thought, but there were gold flecks in it as well, and walls of midnight black.
"Here, you! What do you think you're doing, sir?"
A knight he did not know was glaring at him. A big man with a coal-black beard and boils. But it was the voice that made him blink. A deep voice, thick with anger. It was him. The man with Peak, Dunk realized, as the man said,
"Put that down. I'll thank you to keep your greasy fingers off his lordship's treasures, or by the seven, you shall wish you had."
The other knight was not near as drunk as Dunk, so it seemed wise to do as he said. He put the egg back on its pillow very carefully and wiped his fingers on his sleeve.
I meant no harm, sir.
Dunk the lonk, thick as a castle wall. Then he shoved past the man with the black beard and out the door. There were noises in the stairwell, glad shouts and girlish laughter. The women were bringing Lord Butterwell to his bride. Dunk had no wish to encounter them, so he went up instead of down and found himself on the tower roof beneath the stars, with the pale castle glimmering in the moonlight all around him. He was feeling dizzy from the wine, so he leaned against the parapet. Am I going to be sick? Why did he go and touch the dragon's egg? He remembered Tansel's puppet show and the wooden dragon that had started all the trouble there at Ashford. The memory made Dunk feel guilty, as it always did. Three good men dead to save a hedge knight's foot. It made no sense, and never had. Take a lesson from that, Lunk. It is not for the likes of you to mess about with dragons or their eggs.
It almost looks as if it's made of snow.
Dunk turned. John the Fiddler stood behind him, smiling in his silk and cloth of gold.
What's made of snow?
The castle. All that white stone in the moonlight. Have you ever been north of the Neck, Sir Duncan? I'm told it snows there even in the summer. Have you ever seen the wall?
No, my lord.
Why is he going on about the wall?
That's where we were going, Egg and me, up north, to Winterfell.
Would that I could join you. You could show me the way.
The way?
Dunk frowned.
It's right up the King's Road. If you stay to the road and keep going north, you can't miss it.
The fiddler laughed.
No, I suppose not. Though you might be surprised at what some men can miss.
He went to the parapet and looked out across the castle.
They say those Northmen are a savage folk, and their woods are full of wolves.
My lord, why did you come up here?
Alan was seeking for me, and I did not care to be found.
He grows tiresome when he drinks, does Alan. I saw you slip away from that bedchamber of horrors and slipped out after you. I've had too much wine, I grant you, but not enough to face a naked Butterwell. He gave Dunk an enigmatic smile.
I dreamed of you, Sir Duncan, before I even met you. When I saw you on the road, I knew your face at once. It was as if we were old friends.
Dunk had the strangest feeling then, as if he had lived this all before.
I dreamed of you, he said. My dreams are not like yours, Sir Duncan. Mine are true.
You dreamed of me, he said, in a voice made thick by wine.
What sort of dream?
Why, the fiddler said, I dreamed that you were all in white from head to heel, with a long pale cloak flowing from those broad shoulders. You were a white sword, sir, a sworn brother of the Kingsguard, the greatest knight in all the Seven Kingdoms, and you lived for no other purpose but to guard and serve and please your king.
He put a hand on Dunk's shoulder.
You have dreamed the same dream. I know you have.
He had. It was true. The first time the old man let me hold his sword.
Every boy dreams of serving in the King's Guard.
Only 7 boys grow up to wear the white cloak, though.
Would it please you to be one of them?
Me? Dunk shrugged away the lordling's hand, which had begun to knead his shoulder.
It might. Or not.
The knights of the Kingsguard served for life, and swore to take no wife and hold no lands.
Well, I might find Tansel again some day. Why shouldn't I have a wife and sons?
It makes no matter what I dream. Only a king can make a Kingsguard knight.
I suppose that means I'll have to take the throne, then.
I would much rather be teaching you to fiddle.
You're drunk, and the crow once called the raven black.
Wonderfully drunk. Wine makes all things possible, Sir Duncan. You'd look a god in white, I think. But if the colour does not suit you, perhaps you would prefer to be a lord.
Dunk laughed in his face.
No, I'd sooner sprout big blue wings and fly. One's as likely as t'other.
Now you mock me. A true knight would never mock his king.
The fiddler sounded hurt.
I hope you will put more faith in what I tell you when you see the dragon hatch.
A dragon will hatch? A living dragon? What, here?
I dreamed it. This pale white castle, you, a dragon bursting from an egg. I dreamed it all, just as I once dreamed of my brothers lying dead. They were 12 and I was only 7, so they laughed at me and died. I am 22 now, and I trust my dreams.
Dunk was remembering another tawny, remembering how he had walked through the soft spring rains with another princeling.
I dreamed of you and a dead dragon, Egg's brother Darren said to him. A great beast, huge, with wings so large they could cover this meadow. It had fallen on top of you, but you were alive, and the dragon was dead.
And so he was, poor Baylor. Dreams were a treacherous ground on which to build.
As you say, my lord, he told the fiddler. Pray excuse me.
Where are you going, sir?
To my bed, to sleep. I'm drunk as a dog.
Be my dog, sir. The night's alive with promise. We can howl together and wake the very gods.
What do you want of me?
Your sword. I would make you mine own man and raise you high. My dreams do not lie, Sir Duncan.
You shall have that white cloak, and I must have the dragon's egg. I must. My dreams have made that plain. Perhaps the egg will hatch, or else...
Behind them, the door banged open violently.
There he is, my lord.
A pair of men-at-arms stepped onto the roof. Lord Gorman Peak was just behind them.
Gormy, the fiddler drawled. Why, what are you doing in my bedchamber, my lord?
It is a roof, sir, and you have had too much wine.
Lord Gorman made a sharp gesture, and the guards moved forward.
Allow us to help you to that bed.
You are jousting on the morrow, pray recall. Kirby Pym can prove a dangerous foe.
I had hoped to joust with good Sir Duncan here. Peak gave Dunk an unsympathetic look.
Later, perhaps. For your first tilt, you have drawn Sir Kirby Pym.
Then Pym must fall. So must they all. The Mystery Knight prevails against all challengers, and wonder dances in his wake.
A guardsman took the fiddler by the arm.
Sir Duncan, it seems that we must part, he called as they helped him down the steps.
Only Lord Gorman remained upon the roof with Dunk.
Hedge Knight, he growled, did your mother never teach you not to reach your hand into the dragon's mouth?
I never knew my mother, my lord.
That would explain it. What did he promise you?
A lordship, a white cloak, big blue wings.
Here's my promise. 3 feet of cold steel through your belly, if you speak a word of what just happened.
Dunk shook his head to clear his wits. It did not seem to help. He bent double at the waist and retched. Some of the vomit spattered Peak's boots. The lord cursed.
Hedge knights, he exclaimed in disgust. You have no place here. No true knight would be so discourteous as to turn up uninvited. But you creatures of the hedge...
We are wanted nowhere and turn up everywhere, my lord. The wine had made Dunk bold, else he would have held his tongue. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Try and remember what I told you, sir. It will go ill for you if you do not.
Lord Peak shook the vomit off his boot. Then he was gone. Dunk leaned against the parapet again. He wondered who was madder, Lord Gorman or the fiddler. By the time he found his way back to the hall, only Maynard Plum remained of his companions. Was there any flour on her teats when you got the small clothes off her? He wanted to know. Dunk shook his head, poured himself another cup of wine, tasted it, and decided that he had drunk enough.
Butterwell's stewards had found rooms in the keep for the lords and ladies, and beds in the barracks for their retinues. The rest of the guests had their choice between a straw pallet in the cellar or a spot of ground beneath the western walls to raise their pavilions. The modest sailcloth tent Dunk had acquired in Stony Sept was no pavilion, but it kept the rain and sun off. Some of his neighbours were still awake, the silken walls of their pavilions glowing like coloured lanterns in the night. Laughter came from inside a blue pavilion covered with sunflowers, and the sounds of love from one striped in white and purple. Egg had set up their own tent a bit apart from the others. Maester and the two horses were hobbled nearby, and Dunk's arms and armour had been neatly stacked against the castle walls. When he crept into the tent, he found his squire sitting cross-legged by a candle, his head shining as he peered over a book.
"Reading books by candlelight will make you blind."
Reading remained a mystery to Dunk, but the lad had tried to teach him. "I need the candlelight to see the words, sir. Do you want a clout in the ear? What book is that?" Dunk saw bright colours on the page, little painted shields hiding in amongst the letters. "A roll of arms, sir."
"Looking for the fiddler? You won't find him. They don't put hedge knights on those rolls, just lords and champions."
"I wasn't looking for him. I saw some other sigils in the yard. Lord Sunderland is here, sir. He bears the heads of three pale ladies, on Andy Green and Blue."
"A sister man? Truly?"
The three sisters were islands in the Bight. Dunk had heard Septon say that the Isles were sinks of sin and avarice. Sisterton was the most notorious smuggler's den in all of Westeros.
"He's come a long way. He must be kin to Butterwell's new bride."
"He isn't, sir."
"Well, then he's here for the feast. They eat fish on the Three Sisters, don't they? A man gets sick of fish. Did you get enough to eat? I brought you half a capon and some cheese."
Dunk rummaged in the pocket of his cloak.
"They fed us ribs, sir."
Egg's nose was deep in the book.
"Lord Sunderland fought for the Black Dragon, sir."
"Like old Sir Eustace? He wasn't so bad, was he?"
"No, sir," Egg said, "but..."
"I saw the dragon's egg." Dunk squirreled the food away with their hard bread and salt beef.
"It was red, mostly. Does Lord Bloodraven own a dragon's egg as well?"
Egg lowered his book.
"Why would he? He's base-born."
"Bastard-born, not base-born."
Bloodraven had been born on the wrong side of the blanket, but he was noble on both sides. Dunk was about to tell Egg about the men he'd overheard when he noticed his face.
"What happened to your lip?"
"A fight, sir."
"Let me see it."
"It only bled a little. I dabbed some wine on it."
"Who were you fighting?"
"Some other squires. They said..."
"Never mind what they said. What did I tell you?"
"To hold my tongue and make no trouble."
The boy touched his broken lip.
"They called my father a kinslayer, though."
"He is, lad. Oh, I do not think he meant it." Dunk had told Egg 50 times not to take such words to heart.
"You know the truth. Let that be enough."
They had heard such talk before, in wine sinks and low taverns, and around campfires in the woods. The whole realm knew how Prince Maekar's mace had felled his brother Balor Breakspear at Ashford Meadow. Talk of plots was only to be expected.
"If they knew Prince Maekar was your father, they would never have said such things."
"Behind your back, yes, but never to your face."
"And what did you tell these other squires, instead of holding your tongue?"
Egg looked abashed.
"The Prince Balor's death was just a mishap. Only when I said Prince Maekar loved his brother Balor, Sir Adam's squire said he loved him to death, and Sir Mallor's squire said he meant to love his brother Ares the same way, and that was when I hit him. I hit him good."
"I ought to hit you good. A fat ear to go with that fat lip. Your father would do the same if he were here. Do you think Prince Maekar needs a little boy to defend him? What did he tell you when he sent you off with me?"
"To serve you faithfully as your squire and not flinch from any task or hardship."
"And what else?"
"To obey the king's laws, the rules of chivalry, and you."
"And what else?"
"To keep my hair shaven or dyed," the boy said with obvious reluctance, "and tell no man my true name."
Dunk nodded.
"How much wine had this boy drunk?"
"He was drinking barley beer."
"You see? The barley beer was talking. Words are wind, Egg. Just let him blow on past you."
"Some words are wind."
The boy was nothing if not stubborn.
"Some words are treason. This is a traitor's tourney, sir."
"What, all of them?"
Dunk shook his head. "If it was true, that was a long time ago. The Black Dragon's dead, and those who fought with him are fled or pardoned. And it's not true. Lord Butterwell's sons fought on both sides."
"That makes him half a traitor, sir."
16 years ago. Dunk's mellow, whiny haze was gone. He felt angry and near sober.
"Lord Butterwell's steward is the master of the games, a man named Cosgrove. Find him and enter my name for the lists. No, wait. Hold back my name."
With so many lords on hand, one of them might recall Sir Duncan the Tall from Ashford Meadow.
"Enter me as the Gallows Knight."
The small folk loved it when a mystery knight appeared at a tourney.
Egg fingered his fat lip.
"The Gallows Knight, sir?"
"For the shield. Yes, but go do as I said. You've read enough for one night. Dunk pinched the candle out between his thumb and forefinger. The sun rose hot and high.